Chapter 4. The Manipulation of Radio and Music. The second way the global media is controlling the narrative to control our minds is with radio and music. You see, newspapers are not the only subliminal manipulative technology that's being used on us, on a global basis, by a small group of aliens, I mean rich elites around the world. Believe it or not, radio, including the music played on radio, is as well. It too is out there swaying our minds subconsciously, telling us to buy and consume and even instruct our minds to go back to sleep, never question authority, obey and believe whatever these rich elitists want us to believe, including the need to scoff at the things of God. So, let's keep those glasses on and see how these next media technologies called radio and music are being used to manipulate the minds of the masses on a huge global scale. Frankly, as we saw with newspapers, this manipulation that's being done first with radio broadcasts has been going on, as well, for quite some time now, whether people realize it or not. Let's listen to how it all began.
The history of radio. In the modern era, radio waves controlled everything. From the tunes in your car driving down the road to the police radio in the car that is pulling you over for not signaling your turn.
These waves are undetectable and indivisible to human senses. But they make up the foundation of modern connected technology. The impact it had on our world is immense. It all started in 1873 when James Clerk Maxwell showed mathematically that electromagnetic waves could travel through the air.
Before long, in 1888, Heinrich Hertz demonstrated Maxwell's theory by demonstrating that someone could produce and detect electromagnetic radiation. Then in 1892, Nikola Tesla used Maxwell's mathematical findings to demonstrate the sending and receiving of radio frequency energy.
He proposed that this method could be used for sending and receiving information.
But it was Guglielmo Marconi who built the first wireless transmitter in 1896, which was capable of sending signals up to 1.5 miles.
He then proceeded to build the world's first transatlantic radio communications service between Clifton, Ireland and Newfoundland in 1901. The next evolution in radio technology was the invention of the spark gap transmitter. This device allowed for the production of the first commercially available radio sets.
But the spark gap radios were plagued with problems, mainly electrical interference. These were greatly improved with the invention and production of crystal radio sets. The crystal sets were the first widely produced and widely used radio sets in America. These crystal sets were widely used in most American homes by the 1920s.
It was the American family's connection to the rest of the country.
This was fantastic, but there was still a problem that needed to be fixed. Up to this time, all radios were being broadcast using AM waves. AM stands for amplitude modulation. But the problem was that AM radio had a medium range and was prone to be blocked by urban structures. But in 1933, Edwin H. Armstrong invented FM radio.
FM stands for frequency modulation.
This type of broadcasting method uses a wavelength that is less prone to static and blockage.
It also has a longer range.
With the invention of FM, radio needed only one more evolution to become what we know today.
That last advancement was the transistor radio.
The transistor radio had particular advantages over the old crystal sets. The transistor sets were much cheaper than the crystal ones, used less power, had a smaller size and had a very long lifespan. Over the last century, radio has radically changed the course of humanity and has rapidly accelerated the growth of the information age.
As well as the growth of yet another technology to manipulate the minds of the masses. With newspapers, you could read what was going on around the world local to global. But now with radio, you can hear what is going on in the world local to global. What an upgrade from newspapers. Now you can hear voices, people, and the actual personalities. Why, it is almost like being there. A huge significant improvement, especially if your goal is to manipulate the minds of the masses across the whole planet. And so just like newspapers, once this new manipulative technology called radio sprung into existence, it too began to spread across the whole planet. That is why today, we have an estimated 44,000 radio stations broadcasting throughout the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with over 15,000 of those radio stations being in the US alone. From the very beginning, radio has proved to be yet another powerful form of media to manipulate the minds of the masses, including even causing death. Remember this historical broadcast? Let's listen in.
A clip from the War of the Worlds radio broadcast. Music is playing when it is suddenly interrupted by an emergency alert. Announcer. Now, nearer home, we come to you from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m. a huge flaming object believed to be a meteorite fell on a farm in the vicinity of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. In the sky it was visible from a radius of several hundred miles. And the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene, and we'll have our commentator Carl Phillips give you a word picture of the scene as soon as he can be reached there from Princeton. In the meantime, we take you to the Hotel Martinet in Brooklyn where Bobby Millett and his orchestra are offering a program of dance music. Orchestra music of 1938 is playing while they wait. Announcer, we take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Carl Phillips. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carl Phillips again, out of the Wilmoth Farm in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. I made the 11 miles from Princeton in 10 minutes. I hardly know where to begin to explain your word picture of the strange scene before my eyes. It's something out of the modern Arabian Nights. I just got here, and I haven't had a chance to look around yet. I guess that's it. Yes. I guess that's the thing directly in front of me, half buried in a vast pit. Must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered with splinters of a tree that it must have struck on its way down, but I can see the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor. At least from the meteors I have seen, this looks more like a huge cylinder. What would you say, Professor Pearson? What would you say the diameter of this is? Professor Pearson? About 30 yards. Carl Phillips? About 30 yards, and the metal on the sheath is, well, I've never seen anything like it. The color is sort of yellowish-white. Curious spectators are now pressing close to the object in spite of the efforts of the police to keep them back. They are getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing to one side, please? Oh, well, the first man is pushing the crowd back. Here's Mr. Wilmoth, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmoth, would please tell the radio audience as much as you remember of this rather unusual visitor that stopped in your backyard? Step closer, please. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Wilmoth. Mr. Wilmoth. I was sitting listening to the radio. Carl Phillips. Louder, Mr. Wilmoth, louder please. Mr. Wilmoth. I was listening to the radio and kind of drowsy. That professor fellow was talking about Mars, so I was half dosing and half. Carl Phillips. Yes, yes, Mr. Wilmoth, then what happened? Mr. Wilmoth. Well, as I was saying, I was listening to the radio, kind of halfway. Carl Phillips. Yes, Mr. Wilmoth, and then you saw something? Mr. Wilmoth. Well, not first off. I heard something. Carl Phillips. And what did you hear? Mr. Wilmoth. A hissing sound like this, kind of like a 4th of July rocket. Carl Phillips. Yes, then what? Mr. Wilmoth. I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was asleep and dreaming. I seen a kind of greenish streak in Zingo, something smacked the ground. Knocked me clean out of my chair. Carl Phillips. Well, were you frightened, Mr. Wilmoth? Mr. Wilmoth. Well, I thought sure, I reckon I was kind of riled. Carl Phillips. Thank you, Mr. Wilmoth, thank you very much. Mr. Wilmoth. Do you want me to tell you? Carl Phillips. That's quite all right, that's plenty. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Mr. Wilmoth, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field, in fact the police are trying to rope off the roadway leading into the farm, but it's no use. They are breaking right through. Cars' headlights are growing an enormous spotlight on the pit where the objects have buried. Some of the more daring souls are now venturing near the edge. Can you expand out against the metal scale bar? One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with a policeman, and the policeman wins. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you have caught it already on your radio. Listen, please. Do you hear it? A curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer here. Now we are not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Professor Pearson? Professor Pearson? Yes? Carl Phillips. Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing? Professor Pearson. Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface. Carl Phillips. I say, do you still think it's a meteor, Professor? Professor Pearson. Watch the thing. The metal casing is extraterrestrial, not found on this Earth. Friction from the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite. This thing is smooth. You can see, if the listener. Carl Phillips. Something's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is terrific. This end of the thing is beginning to flake off. The top is beginning to rotate like a screw. This thing must be hollow. The crowd starts to get excited about what they are seeing. They are yelling with excitement. The police are trying to push the people back. The police scream, "Keep those idiots back." Carl Phillips. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I have ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Someone is crawling out, I can see, out of that black hole to luminous disks for, could be eyes, might be a face on the world of heaven. Something coming out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now there is another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, they look like tentacles to me, I can now see the thing's body. It is large, large as a bear, systems like wet leather. Hey ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable, I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. It's so awful. Its eyes are black and green like a serpent. The mouth is kind of V-shaped with saliva dripping from its lips which are quivering or pulsating. The monster or whatever it is, it can hardly move. He's weighed down by possibly gravity or something. The thing is rising up now and the crowd falls back. This is indescribable to put into words. I will pull this microphone with me as they talk to them. I have to take a new position, hold on, I will be right back in a minute. Music plays again during the break and the reporter gets into a new area to report what is going on. Announcer. We are bringing you an eyewitness account of what's happening on the Wilmoth Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Once again, the music starts to play. Announcer. We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill. Carl Phillips. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, here I am back with Stonewall that joins us here at Wilmoth's Garden. From here I get a sweep of the whole thing. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk, as long as I can stay. More state police have arrived and are drawing up a cordon in front of the pit, about 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now, they are willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. I can't quite see who. Oh yes, I believe it is Professor Pearson. Yes, yes, it is, and now they have parted. The professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I see now. It is a white cloth tied to a pole. A flag of truce. I hope those creatures know what that means, about what anything means. Wait, there is something happening. A large shape is rising out of the pit, but then they have a small beam of light against a mirror. But there is a jet of flame springing in the mirror, at least slightly. Advancing men, strikes them head on. Lord. They're turning into flames. Flames are spreading everywhere, coming this way, about 20 yards right. Announcer. Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently there is some difficulty with our field transmission, however we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. 2. Now what you just read was the classic, War of the Worlds radio broadcast aired back in 1938. And granted, even though many people may be somewhat familiar with that historical broadcast, what most people are oblivious to, are the horrible effects from that broadcast, and the damaging effect it had on the minds of the masses, including in some cases, death. Here is what happened. The War of the Worlds broadcast caused chaos in 1938. Thousands of people misunderstood it as a news broadcast of a current catastrophe in New Jersey, and it created an almost unbelievable scene of terror in New York, New Jersey, the South, and as far west as San Francisco. The panic started when an announcer suddenly interrupted the program of a dance orchestra to flash an imaginary bulletin that a mysterious meteor had struck New Jersey, lighting the heavens for miles around. A few seconds later, the announcer flashed the tidings that weird monsters were swarming out of the masses of metal, which was not a meteor but a tube-like car from Mars, and were destroying hundreds of people with death ray guns. Without waiting for further details, thousands of listeners rushed from their homes in New York and New Jersey, many with towels across their faces to protect themselves from the gas which the invader was supposed to be spewing forth. Simultaneously, thousands more in states that stretch west to California and south to the Gulf of Mexico rushed to their telephones to inquire of newspapers, the police, switchboard operators, and electric companies as to what they should do to protect themselves. The space cartridge was supposed to have struck at Grover's Mills, an actual town near Princeton. Names of well-known highways were used in describing the advance of the monsters. The governor of New Jersey declared martial law and the Secretary of the Interior tried to calm the people. 1,100 calls flooded the switchboard at the news, even more than when the dirigible Hindenburg exploded. Occupants of the Park Avenue apartment houses flocked to the street. In Harlem, excited crowds shouted that President Roosevelt's voice had warned them to pack up and move north because the machines are coming from Mars. The dramatization of Wells' novel had featured a fictitious speech from the governor of New Jersey, assuring the public that the National Guard had been mobilized to fight the Martian monsters, and the Harlem residents had confused the mythical governor with the president. Churches in both New York and New Jersey were filled suddenly with persons seeking protection, and who found them, providentially, as they thought, open. At St. Michael's Hospital, in Newark, 15 persons were treated for shock. In New York, police and fire departments and the newspapers were swamped with telephone calls from people, apparently frightened half out of their wits. The telephone company also was deluged. Many of the callers seemed on the point of hysteria. One woman said she had relatives in the stricken section of New Jersey and wanted to know if their names were on the casualty lists. The New York City Department of Health was among the first to call the news. The department wanted to know what assistance it could lend to the maimed and dying. Hundreds of physicians and nurses were among the callers. Many of them said they were prepared to rush at once into the devastated area to aid in caring for victims. Scores of motorists traveling through Jersey heard the broadcast and immediately detoured so as not to pass through the supposedly doomed region. Police in many small Jersey towns and villages called state police headquarters to offer assistance. At Princeton University, two members of the geology faculty, equipped with flashlights and hammers, started for Grover's Mills, 2 miles away, where the meteor supposedly fell. Dozens of cars were driven to the hamlet by curious motorists. A score of university students were phoned by their parents and told to come home. An anonymous and somewhat hysterical girl phoned the Princeton Press Club from Grover's Mills and said, "You can't imagine the horror of it." A man came into the club and said he saw the meteor strike the earth and witnessed animals jumping from the alien body. In Watchung, New Jersey, an excited policeman on desk duty, notified by horrified citizens that a meteor struck somewhere nearby, sent squad cars out to look for injured. Please, of what can we do? Where can we go to save ourselves? Flooded New Jersey police switchboards from Hoboken to Cape May. In Newark alone, two patrolmen handled more than 2,000 calls from hysterical persons terrified by the fake news bulletin. Harassed Newark police tried to reassure thousands of panicky citizens. In Irvington, New Jersey, hundreds of motorists who heard the announcement of the meteor and the gas attack shouted warnings to each other in the streets. "Drive like mad into the country. We're being bombed by enemies," drivers shouted to one another. Motorcycle police, astounded by the sudden bursts of speed by motorists, rushed to call boxes to inquire from headquarters about the supposed raids. In the Sacred Heart Church in Elizabeth, priests were amazed by a sudden influx of panicky persons who rushed inside, fell on their knees, and began to pray. The announcement that 7,000 National Guard members were being mobilized to defend New Jersey from the invaders caused hundreds of guardsmen to swamp the 113th Regiment Armory and the 102nd Cavalry Armory with calls and queries on where to report for duty. A motorist parked near the Lodi Theater in Orange, New Jersey, tuned into the program, listened for a moment, and then ran breathlessly into the movie house. "The state is being invaded," he screamed. "This place is going to be blown up." When Manuel Priola heard the broadcast in his bar at 433 Valley Road, Orange, he closed the cash register and announced to his customers, "You folks can go where you like. I'm closing up this place and going home." And he did. Evening services at the First Baptist Church in Caldwell, New Jersey, were well underway when a frantic parishioner dashed in and yelled that a meteor had fallen nearby and the whole countryside was threatened. The Reverend Thomas calmed his flock and called them to pray for deliverance. A terrified motorist asked patrolman Lawrence Traeger the way to Route 24. "All creation's busted loose," he yelled, "and I'm getting out of Jersey." Panic swept one apartment house in Greenwich Village, largely occupied by Italian families, after tenants caught scraps of the broadcast. The super realism of the drama sent Caroline Cantlin, an actress with a WPA Gilbert and Sullivan unit, to Polyclinic Hospital. Sitting in her room at the Markwell Hotel, on 49th Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue, Miss Cantlin turned on her radio. She heard an announcement of smoke in Times Square. She rushed out into the hallway and down the stairs. She stumbled and fell, fracturing her arm at the wrist. In Pittsburgh, Associated Press reported, a man returned home in the middle of the broadcast and found his wife with a bottle of poison in her hand, saying, "I'd rather die this way than like that." The Washington Post reported that one Baltimore listener died of a heart attack during the show. And a later Spanish version of the War of the Worlds broadcast caused a panic that turned into a riot that resulted in at least 7 deaths.
So, as you can see, even from radio's early stages of development, the War of the Worlds radio broadcast demonstrated the true manipulative power of this new media technology and what it could do to the minds of the masses. It really can and does, even to this day, have the ability to produce fright, panic, riotous behavior, or even in some cases even cause death. A very powerful tool to add to the manipulative arsenal of these aliens, I mean rich elites, across the planet, over the minds of the masses. And believe it or not, this seductive, manipulative and dangerous side effect that the radio has upon its listeners has only grown and has gotten even more sophisticated in the following decades since that fateful and historical broadcast of the War of the Worlds. In fact, right on up to today, radio is being used on a massive scale to manipulate people in ways that frankly are hard for the average person to even fathom. And once again, as you will see here in a moment, for some pretty nefarious reasons as well. Just like newspapers, the assumption we're all making with radio, as well, is we hope these rich elite owners of all these radio stations across the whole planet are being open and honest and fair with all this information that we're now listening to from them. I mean, surely these elites wouldn't use radio to subliminally manipulate the minds of the masses like they do with newspapers to create a desired outcome for their own nefarious purposes, would they? Oh, how I wish I could say no to that as well, but again, I would be lying, like those rich elites are. As you will soon see, the usage of radio to manipulate the minds of the masses by controlling the narrative and even using subliminal messaging as well as to encourage people to scoff at the things of God, has been going on for quite some time now, way beyond what the War of the Worlds broadcast ever accomplished. In fact, just like with newspapers, the average person today is also making the blind mistake with radio, thinking it's an open and free market technology that allows people or broadcasters to share with their listeners their own independent thinking or thoughts. In fact, a recent survey acknowledged that 79% of listeners said that commercial radio gives helpful, concise updates on the news throughout the day. And that, it helped them stay informed of what's happening in the world around them. So much so are people blindly trusting the information they're getting from radio, that the very same survey even stated that radio broadcasts are given the highest trustworthiness of all forms of media.
Radio, 77%, television, 74%, print newspapers, 48%, newspaper websites / apps, 45%, and social media finishing up last with only 15%.
And they even conclude with these words concerning the reliability of radio: put your trust issues at bay. Really? Are you sure about that? Actually, as you'll see in a moment, nothing could be further from the truth. Now granted, maybe radio broadcasts started out being an open and honest and free media platform to share ideas and information for the good of the public, or as they would say, a trustworthy source of information. But just like with newspapers, radio stations today are now in the hands of a select few group of elites all around the world, and they now use the radio to control the information we are receiving and even manipulate us with it for their own nefarious ends, just like they do with newspapers. If you do not believe me, here's just some of the proof.
The 1996 Telecommunications Act removed all national and local restrictions on national ownership that specified the number of stations one company could own in a set market. Before 1996, a company was prohibited from owning more than 40 stations, and from owning more than 2 AM and 2 FM stations in one market. The bill covered a wide range of formats, and it was the first time the internet was included in broadcasting and spectrum allotment. The federal government has regulated the extent of ownership for radio stations since the 1934 Communications Act. The policy was based on the notion that the airwaves were accessible to the public and therefore had an accompanying public trust. However, the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, FCC, began to relax these limitations.
Research indicates that the 1996 Telecommunications Act was one of the most lobbied bills in history.
Media interests spent $34 million on campaign contributions for the 1995-96 election cycles, nearly 40% more than the previous election. The public was mostly uninformed of potential consequences, as the media covered the Telecommunications Act as a business technicality instead of a public policy story, assuring deregulation would increase competition and generate high-paying jobs.
There was no discernible public debate.
Since deregulation in 1996, more than a third of all U.S. radio stations have been bought and sold. In the year following the legislation alone, 2,045 radio stations were sold, a net value of $13.6 billion. Of the 4,992 total stations across 268 set radio markets, almost half are now owned by a single company, and the number of stations owned by the 10 largest companies increased by roughly 15 times between 1985 and 2005.
Consolidation merely means less owners. Media ownership, who owns what?
Media giants pursue strategies of owning clusters of newspapers, radio, and television stations in the same market to increase potential revenue. Radio stations in the United States have seen greater consolidation than newspapers or television in the past 10 years. If you as a radio broadcaster wish to enter the market as a station owner, you stand no chance buying into the market share dominated by a small handful of media giants. The following breakdown shows the heavyweights. Forever Media Incorporated owns 83 radio stations. Salem Media Group owns 109 radio stations. Saga Communications Incorporated owns 113 radio stations.
Entercom Communications currently owns and operates 235 radio stations in the United States in 48 media markets.
Townsquare Media owns over 321 radio stations in 67 markets. Cumulus Media Incorporated has invested in radio stations, reaching nearly 70 of 287 possible markets on 429 stations in the United States. Clear Channel Communications Incorporated owned 173 radio stations in 1997. In 2004, Clear Channel owned 1,207 radio stations, or 1,400 worldwide. In just 7 years, Clear Channel grew 30 times more than congressional regulation previously allowed. Their aggressive acquisitions have given them ownership of 247 of the nation's 250 largest radio markets, and their domination of the top 40 format makes them undeniably a significant player. Today, Clear Channel, the country's largest radio broadcaster, has switched its name to iHeartRadio Incorporated. iHeartRadio Incorporated owns Premier Networks, which in turn owns The Rush Limbaugh Show, The Sean Hannity Show, The Glenn Beck Program, Coast to Coast AM, American Top 40, Delilah, and Fox Sports Radio, all being among the top national radio programs in their category. This follows a general trend of consolidation of media ownership, where corporate interests take precedence over the artistic integrity of the content.
This is especially true of the music industry.
We will eventually get into the music industry as well, but as you can see, the bulk of radio stations, including worldwide radio stations, are now in the hands of a select few elite organizations. Anybody starting to see a pattern here when it comes to the media? It is all in the hands of a small group of aliens, I mean rich elites. And they even admit it. It's all about corporate interests taking precedence over the artistic integrity of the content. In other words, it's not about an open and free media technology that allows people or broadcasters to share with their listeners their own independent thinking or thoughts, let alone non-biased information. Rather, just like with newspapers, now radio is being used as well by these elites to control the narrative of what we listen to for their own private corporate interests. Just like with newspapers, radio has become another media stream where they just drivel on and on with a pre-selected pre-programmed specific message that these elites want us to hear for their own private agendas that manipulate us into thinking whatever they want us to think, whether we realize it or not. It's no different than newspapers. All radio has become is yet another media technology that's being used on us on a global scale for nefarious purposes. Now we are getting hit from two technological angles, at the same time every single day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you don't believe we're really getting a bunch of pre-programmed, pre-scripted, pre-selected packages of information from radio stations by these rich elites from around the world, let me give you just one quick example of just how long this pre-packaging and pre-programming has been going on with radio, even as far back as 1976.
The way radio was in 1976, at radio station 6KY, the way radio is in this century. This dramatic contrast in radio broadcasting at 6KY is all accomplished with the help of Fred, the most modern and surprisingly simple to operate Schaefer system designed and built in the United States. Fred, or the Schaefer 903E, is the epitome of sophisticated equipment offering the alternative of manual and completely automatic operation. The Schaefer 903E stores 3,871 recyclable format events, which can be divided into as many subformats as desired or programmed in straight-lined fashion for random access cartridge music selections. This system can provide 3 days of time-related avails, 60 per hour for 72 hours. Enough to pre-program all commercials, music, newscasts, and other time-orientated events over a weekend or 3 days in advance. The program is manually fed into the keyboard display terminal that contains a digital clock with day, time, event, source and spike display. A 16-key keyboard and 4-key keyboard mode controls are included. From here you can get a teletype readout on the Extel or a readout on the visual display unit. The 903E features two alarm systems. The first is a silent sense alarm and the second a closed loop alarm. If for any reason a tape deck is not ready to play or a tape breaks or the silent sensor is triggered, the alarm will sound until manually reset. The next scheduled event automatically takes over. Meanwhile, back with Fred, the TIAC Apex is set up. The four audio files are loaded with cartridges. The Schaefer 903E system is automatically programmed for up to 72 hours, and the on-air staff go home to enjoy their weekend and listen to their radio station.
That has been what? Totally automated with no human intervention, with built-in alarms, to protect it from ever breaking down and stopping the preloaded, pre-packed, pre-programmed drivel of information that we are receiving from radio. You just thought this whole time there was an actual live human disc jockey there. No way. That was back in 1976. And if you don't think it's gotten even more sophisticated than that, you're simply fooling yourself. Radio is totally computerized now with the latest new gadgetry and technology, which has way more options than just those old school tape decks, teletypes, and visual display units. They can now pre-program and pre-package to their heart's content with modern technology. And my point is, even as far back as 1976, you can already see the trend where these rich elites no longer need humans to run their radio stations anymore. In fact, for decades now, whether you realized it or not, it's all been automated to control the content for manipulative purposes on the minds of the masses. Why? Because the last thing these aliens, I mean rich elites, want is for some human disc jockey to slip up and actually tell people the truth about something, like what they're up to, how they're manipulating us, let alone share some free thoughts with the radio audience, that went against the controlled narrative of the elites, that the population was being forced to digest whether they wanted it or not or realized it or not. In fact, my eyes were open to this automation of radio nearly 30 years ago. Back then, I had won some concert tickets from a radio station that I was listening to by being a certain number of the callers into the station. So, sure enough, they instructed me to come down to the radio station and pick up my winnings. Yet, when I got there, I walked into the station and I heard the music being played and even the voice of the human disc jockey talking in the background. But as I continued to spy around the room, there was no human at all. It was all totally automated with racks of electronic equipment covering the walls. I was shocked. In fact, I was actually deflated because I actually thought I was going to meet the real live person that I'd been listening to this whole time on this particular radio station. I could not believe I was listening to a wall of pre-programmed tapes this whole time with computers dishing out a pre-packaged radio experience. What a joke. In fact, there's an actual term in the radio industry for this automation of radio. It's called radio homogenization. It is defined as this.
The shift to stations airing the same pre-recorded program material and central casting via internet or satellite. This shift occurred because it is no longer cost-effective to have a full staff or studio for every signal on the air.
In other words, we're not paying humans anymore to do this for us. Now it's all computerized radio broadcasts. Why?
In the name of efficiency, new technology has allowed a station's technician to cut and paste news, weather, and host chatter into pre-recorded programming. News programming in particular is often produced and recorded at a remote location, as the practice streamlines the number of personalities needed on the air and emulates a similar feel for the listener. This process of regionalized programming is now common practice. For radio broadcasters, the more homogeneity between different services held in common ownership, or the more elements within a program schedule which can be shared between different stations, the greater the opportunity to gain profits. This increase of cost efficiency also results in cutting staff and centralizing programming decisions on what should be broadcast. Consolidation has made it even less likely that one will hear something new, different, or unique.
In other words, it's all the same drivel universally. Radio is totally controlled and totally scripted, providing a prepackaged narrative. That is what we are getting from these radio stations from around the world, whether we realize it or not, and they're now owned by a handful of aliens, I mean rich elites. And you might be thinking, well, okay, even if radio is pre-programmed and pre-packaged, at least there's still a human involved in the packaging and in the programming process. Not anymore. Thanks to modern technology and the rise of AI or artificial intelligence, now you do not even need humans for that. Now they are moving to AI disc jockeys.
Denise, this is 917 Croft FM. My name is Denise. I am the world's first artificial intelligent radio DJ.
I would like to thank all the listeners out there from all around the world.
This song, which is sung by TLC and created for the entire movement of women who are fed up with good-for-nothing men in their lives. This song goes out to anyone out there that has ever been accused of cheating on their lover. It's called Guilty by Suspicion.
Manager of radio station.
Last month I had to let go over 800 employees as a result of implementing events of automation and artificial intelligence technology. 57 of those employees were radio disc jockeys. Unfortunately, the DJs of today are yet another occupation set to be eliminated due to technology. AI sparked restructuring and reorganization, and it is going to continue spreading from industry to industry as the technology gains hold and takes root. Rad, another AI disc jockey.
Hello and welcome back.
Here's a couple of songs to pass the time on this Thursday afternoon.
Playlists are for people who already know what they want. The rest of you have radio.
That was Tones and I, with Dance Monkey. Next up is Sledgehammer.
One of the more tolerable songs by Peter Gabriel. All the hits all the time, only on Radiant.
And only being done by non-humans called AI. Can you believe this? AI disc jockeys. No humans needed at all, including to pick the pre-programmed, pre-packaged material that they are broadcasting to us. And who's one of the major entities behind this push to remove humans from all aspects of radio broadcasting? It was iHeartRadio, one of the aliens, I mean rich elites, who owns most of the radio broadcast stations on the planet. Now, speaking of the planet, these same rich elites have also taken radio broadcasts global as well. In fact, this new method of global radio broadcasting is not in just the hands of a select few. No way. Believe it or not, it is down to simply one, if you can believe that. And this is being done with the latest radio technology out there called satellite radio that broadcasts radio signals all around the world at the same time. And since these radio broadcasts are being run and beamed by satellites that orbit the world, now nobody in the whole world can escape their pre-programmed, pre-packaged narrative that they want us to listen to. In fact, let's take a look at how that global radio technology arrived on the scene called satellite radio.
Satellite radio, it is exactly what it sounds like. It is radio brought to you by satellite, typically to your car. How many of you have bought a new car that came with one of these? Sirius XM is the one and only provider, and they have deals in place with every major automaker. If you are buying a new car in the US, no matter what make or model, you can probably get it with a satellite radio. There is quite a bit of content that you won't get otherwise. I'm talking about certain genres of music, sports, news broadcasts, Howard Stern, other talk show, and I'm sure you can name many other benefits or drawbacks, but that is my overview. If there is specific content that is attractive to you, you might like Sirius XM. Sirius XM is the results of combining two struggling companies named Sirius Satellite Radio and XM Satellite Radio. I want to focus on these two mostly before their merger, highlighting their struggles, how they competed with each other, what made them different, and what ultimately motivated them to come together. The first major difference is in their formation. Sirius was always pursuing satellite radio, where XM was initially intended to be more involved in satellite telephone services. Sirius was started by Robert Briskman, who was an engineer who had previously worked at NASA and Geostar. He had created this technology that was able to broadcast radio signals using satellites. So, he started this company that would hopefully utilize that technology to provide a satellite radio service. It was initially called Satellite CD Radio, but the name was changed to Sirius in 1999. Sirius, by the way, is the name of the brightest star in the sky. It is part of a dog constellation, which explains why there is a dog on their logo. XM was started for a very different reason. It was in 1988 when 8 different companies came together to form the AMSC, the American Mobile Satellite Corporation. Their main intention was to make telephones that operated using satellite technology. In 1995 they put out their first phone, but it was considered a pretty big failure. It was too expensive, and the mobile phone industry was changing, so it didn't look like this was going in a very promising direction. They were thought to be coming pretty close to bankruptcy. It took a $225 million line of credit to save them. But fortunately, they started a satellite radio division back in 1992 that would soon become an important part of their business. In 1998 they changed the name of that radio segment to XM Satellite Radio, and the next year they spun it off into their own company. But the AMSC would retain the majority ownership. I'm going to go on and add the name change to this because they have both become recognizable names. Both of these companies started out with different names. The name XM was adapted in 1998, and the name Sirius came a year later. A big part of this early on, and the reason that these two were the only names in satellite radio, has to do with their ability to obtain a license from the FCC. In order to legally do what they wanted to do, they needed to possess a license to enable them to broadcast satellite radio signals. And the FCC only gave out 2 of them. The circumstances get complex, but they were bought in 1997. Sirius came in first and paid $83 million for it, and XM came in a year later paying $90 million for theirs. So, at this point we only have 2 companies with only each other to compete with. But they were trying to provide a service that takes so much time and money to get started. They had to have satellites built and launched into orbit. XM was building a 2-satellite network where Sirius had 3. I guess XM had to use more of these things called repeaters on the ground to help the signal in some areas. I believe the end result was similar quality to the users. I don't know exactly how it all works. But it was expensive. Both of them spent a little over $1 billion before they ever had a single customer. Leading me to their next comparison, their launch date, which may sound trivial, but their launch date is significant because whoever is available on the market first is going to take a lead. For both of them, their launch date was pushed back, one of them far more than the other. XM planned to launch on the unfortunate date of September 12, 2001, which for obvious reasons was pushed back, but only by 2 weeks. September 25th of that year they officially launched their service to a limited market, and by November it was going out to the entire country. I wouldn't call that ideal. Things went much worse over at Sirius. Back in 1998 they said that they expected to launch things towards the end of 2000, which would have given them a lead of almost a year ahead of XM. But they had issues internally that forced them to keep pushing it back until they finally launched it to a limited market in February 2002. And then not widely available until July of that year. Effectively giving XM a considerable lead. Before Sirius was ever even on the market, XM had over 30,000 subscribers, and it was named Product of the Year by Fortune. All of those struggles helped put Sirius near to bankruptcy shortly after their launch. They were forced to raise money by converting hundreds of millions of dollars of debt into common stock. A desperation move which made their shares outstanding almost 10 times higher. More shares, each one was worth less, and caused their stock price to drop well under a dollar by the end of 2002. Since they were both finally providing an actual service, it would make sense to compare their subscribers. In their final separate year, it was still noticeably higher for XM, although Sirius was beginning to catch up. When you look at the graph at that time, XM always seemed to be about a year ahead. Possibly further showing how Sirius was hurt by those delays. A good thing to go along with this would be revenue, because they do make most of their revenue from these subscriptions. And as we would expect, it was higher for XM all the way through their final year apart. But here is what I want to point out. We don't often see a graph like this because they were both operating their companies for years without the actual sales part of the business. The way they were able to pull that off was very similar between the two. Taking out loans, selling parts of the company commonly through separate rounds of public stock offerings, similar to what I mentioned before. The graph that I find the most interesting is their net income, or in this case their net loss graph. Before they were providing a service, it was obviously negative because there was no revenue to offset the expenses. But you would hope that after you get the service going, it would start to get better. Well, in this case, things just got worse. It was costly to run this service. Here are a few ways that they competed with each other. Deals with the car makers, these were vital. In the beginning of this video, I talked about how the service is now available in practically any new car. But at this time, they were competing against each other to attract different makers so they would include the radios and services in their new cars. The big ones for Sirius were Chrysler, Ford, and BMW, which made up 40% of all car sales. For XM it was Honda, but mainly GM. GM actually owned a significant stake in the company, which could be part of the reason that XM always had a bigger focus on cars. At one point, half of all of their new subscribers were coming from people who got them pre-installed when they bought their new GM cars, while for Sirius only about a quarter of their new subscriptions came from any of their car partners. Sports. In 2003, Sirius made multi-year multi-million dollar deals with the NFL and the NHL to secure exclusive satellite radio broadcasting rights to all of their games. In 2004, XM responded strong when they paid $650 million to exclusively broadcast all of the MLB games over their channels for the next 11 years. Also, we have DJs. XM signed a contract with Opie and Anthony in 2004, but I think anyone would agree that the most significant one was when Sirius made a deal with Howard Stern. It was an unprecedented radio contract that they would pay almost $500 million for him to move his show exclusively to their service for the next 5 years. They were willing to pay that much because Howard Stern had a very large, very dedicated following. When surveyed, about 30% of them said that they would pay that subscription price so they can continue listening to him. Do you see how much money that they were forced to pay to have a service that subscribers thought was worth paying for? Because of these excessive expenses, both Sirius and XM believed that satellite radio could not continually exist with two companies competing for market share, basically saying the market could not stand to be fragmented at all. Just looking at all of this, I'd say, they may have had a point. Even with the level of growth that they were experiencing, nothing good was happening financially. Then once it's not new anymore, most people already have their subscriptions, if they were going to get them. And things would just get worse. It was already bad and not thought to be moving in a good direction. If the two were to come together, they could combine their assets, cut down on the costs, stop competing with each other. I guess sort of like when you can't afford to live on your own and you go out and find a roommate. In 2008, they got all the approvals they needed, and the merger happened. They formed a combined company called SiriusXM with 19 million subscribers. My guess that neither of these companies and satellite radio in general would not exist today. Otherwise, the merger was controversial. It took over a year to be approved. It had to go through the Department of Justice and the FCC. The big concern was that it would create a monopoly as far as satellite radio, which is hard to argue.
Yeah, no kidding. Now one entity controls all the satellite radio on the whole planet. But hey, even if radio has gone global and the human element has been totally removed altogether, like with AI, then I'm sure we can trust the content of what's being broadcast to us, right? I mean, surely these elites wouldn't be using all this radio technology to manipulate the minds of the masses on a global scale for nefarious purposes like we saw with newspapers. Oh, how I wish that were true. Unfortunately, they too are using radio to manipulate us on a grand scale, again, that I think most people have a hard time believing. In fact, let me just give you a small sampling of that proof as well. First, as we saw in our earlier section, the methods of subliminal technology, we clearly saw that for many years now, shops, stores, industries, and various corporate entities have been using subliminal audio messaging to control, curb, and influence people's behavior for a their own desired outcome, whether people realized it or not. Remember that? Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the usage of subliminal audio manipulation of the minds of the masses. Believe it or not, subliminal messaging has been used on, we, the populace, to affect our mindset and behavior for a long time now. In fact, secular researchers not only admit it, but they even call it for what it is. It is a form of mind control.
Subliminal messages are linked to the idea of mind control, and the roots of this are placed very far back in our history. Mind control is where an individual or group of individuals can be controlled without their awareness. It is perception below the threshold of the individual or group. The implementation of mind control techniques brought about the idea that people can be made to do things they would not ordinarily do. Since at least the 5th century BC, the early Greeks used the science of rhetoric as a way of influencing people. By infusing pieces of mind-persuading data into sentences, people can manipulate others by the language they use. If a person sees or hears certain bits of information, i.e., words, fragments, or sentences, placed strategically, they can be persuaded one way or another, without perhaps knowing. Based on experimental findings in social psychology and the way in which we process information, the effectiveness of subliminal perception has been continually examined throughout history. Subliminal messages and mind control persist to be under scrutiny. We have reason to believe that subliminal messaging is effective based on findings in historical contexts. An example of auditory subliminal messaging dates back to the 1920s when the BBC began broadcasting on radio for the first time. The people of that era thought the radio was so sinister. They considered it to be the voice of the devil. The BBC wanted to change this attitude, so they placed certain phrases using backward masking in their jingles. This may be an example of subliminal messages being used to persuade an entire nation to respond in a way they would not normally respond. A radio jingle was aired, which sounded completely innocent, but when played backwards it reveals a different purpose. The words, "This is not a noose, no, really it's not," can clearly be heard from subliminal messages and backmasking. The BBC believed the subconscious could pick up backward messages in ordinary speech. The BBC is obviously still around today, so perhaps this jingle actually did serve its deeper purpose. Public concern about subliminal manipulation led to an enormous response from the public. Individuals as well as legislators imagined possible effects of subliminal perception in the future, a world where everyone was subliminally manipulated to do what perhaps the government wanted them to do. Throughout history, we have looked to political and governmental institutions to examine whether mind control and subliminal perception has been used amongst the general public. The CIA, for example, is one branch of government thought to use this technique in order to gain its authority over large bodies of people. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission, FCC, received complaints of a television station using subliminal messages in 1974. This was the first new case since the original in the 1950s. In the 1970s, controlled studies were conducted by the British psychologist Anthony Marcel. The experiments were based on previous findings indicating that a decision regarding a stimulus is primed when the stimulus follows a related stimulus. They have used other stimuli as well, such as pictures, faces, and spoken words. These other stimuli do prime or facilitate the following decisions when they are presented in an atmosphere that makes it hard to distinguish one stimulus from another stimulus. The belief is that the substantial information is perceived even when observers have little or no awareness of perceiving, as shown by their difficulty in discriminating one stimulus from another stimulus. In 1979, there were subliminal anti-theft messages from the music of Muzak. It was shown to decrease theft, internal inventory shrinkage as well, by 37%. In recent years, the term subliminal perception has been made more general to describe any situation in which unnoticed stimuli are perceived. Subliminal messages can be seen in our advertisements if we look hard enough. Do we buy certain cars because the rhetoric used enhances our desire to? Do we buy products because the ad in a magazine persuades us underneath our threshold of perception? Do we drink certain brands of soda because of product placement in movies that we perhaps do not notice? Do we recycle because the cast members in primetime television do, but we do not consciously see this while tuning in?
I would say the answer is yes, based on the research, and that's precisely why they do these things. Think about it. Why would they go through all the effort, let alone the cost, to produce all these different kinds of subliminal messaging in media if it really has zero effects on us, as some skeptics would have us believe? I mean, these rich elites are obviously in it for the money and, dare I say, power. In fact, speaking of money, The usage of subliminal messaging, including subliminal audio messaging on the populace to affect their mindset and behavior, has not only been going on for a long time now, but it's even become a multi-million dollar business today where people are actually willingly lining up to have their brain subliminally altered. They even pay for it. It's called subliminal self-help technology, and people are using it to literally subliminally change their mindset and behavior by themselves. They actually think it's a good thing to be subliminally manipulated. Gee, I wonder where they got that idea from. How did that thought get into their brain? But here is some of that proof.
Backmasking is the process of recording hidden messages in music which can only be revealed when a song is played backward.
This technique was first used by the British Broadcasting Corporation in the 1920s.
Since then, various artists have been accused of lacing their music with efforts to convert listeners from worshipping Satan to killing themselves to smoking marijuana.
Retailers have also taken advantage of the ability to encode messages into music by playing subliminal tapes to secretly persuade shoppers.
Some websites offer tapes of upbeat jazz or Latino music, under which are recorded messages geared to push consumers to spend or deter them from stealing.
Don't worry about the money. Or imagine owning it. Accompany other audio messages such as buy now and don't take it, you'll get caught.
According to one vendor of such materials, sales are reported to have been increased by 15% and thefts decreased by 58% by stores who used the tapes. According to several experts, recording subliminal messages under music can not only persuade people to buy instead of steal, but it can also change our lives. Self-help subliminal audio tapes can be found in bookstores, on the web, in shopping malls and in mail-order catalogs. Anytime you can listen to a CD while sleeping, driving to work, jogging outside or cooking dinner, for example, you can subliminally learn a new language, quit smoking, lose weight, or improve your attitude without having to consciously participate in the change. Though you may not be aware of what you are hearing, parts of your brain are still acquiring information.
Build self-confidence. Lose weight. Reduce pain. Quit smoking.
Speak effectively.
Read faster. Improve productivity. Increase personal effectiveness.
These are but a few of the subliminal program titles available to help people improve some part of their lives.
The subliminal self-help industry is booming, with annual retail sales topping $50 million. The word subliminal is defined as below the threshold of consciousness.
Typically, what happens is messages are hidden either visually in a video or audio that suggests the listener improve in a selected area. The premise underlying subliminal stimulation is that the hidden message is noticed by the unconscious and from there changes our actions. Given this idea, products are marketed claiming people can effortlessly accomplish in a short time what others struggle or fail to do in a lifetime, hence making these mass-marketed tapes very attractive. For example, Gateway Institute's audio tapes advertise, "Subliminal tapes work, so you don't have to.
Simply play the audio while you work, play, drive, read, exercise, relax, watch TV, or even as you sleep. No concentration is required for the audio to be effective. They work whether you pay attention to them or not."
Audio tapes are the most popular subliminal media. Commercial subliminal audio tapes share a common format. When played, all the listener consciously detects is sound consisting of rain, music, or ocean waves, with an occasional cricket or seagull. Although each company's tapes may be distinguished by a unique mix of blanketing sounds, different tapes produced by the same company are often indistinguishable. Presumably, what separates the many different tapes produced by each company are the claimed embedded subliminal messages that are impossible for a listener to consciously detect.
There are a boatload of companies out there making money off subliminal messages.
These are usually audio recordings that promise to help you with everything from getting a child to stop sucking his thumb to learning a foreign language while you sleep. There is even a program that boasts being able to program your body to use mental birth control. We don't recommend trying this at home. Some people claim these messages are also influential when they are embedded in a computer screen, and there are programs available that users can download onto their machines in order to receive stimuli while working or playing on the computer. Behavior modification software can run on any laptop or PC along with other programs, and the latest available packages cost anywhere from $50 to $500. Websites offer software to help users learn how to make their own subliminal messages or to run prefabricated ones across the screen.
So great, Now you can make up your own subliminal messages to alter your own brain, or, in other words, brainwash yourself instead of having to wait for the elites do it for you. It's crazy, isn't it? In fact, this self-brainwashing trend with subliminal technology, because that's what it is so commonplace now, that they even have free tutorials online with free programs that show you how to make your own customized subliminal messages for yourself.
Reality creation, create your ideal reality now. Narrator, I'm going to show you how to make a simple subliminal message, overlaid, over where your MP3s or a song. Alright, first thing first, we're going to open up our bass file. This will be the song that you want to overlay the subliminal message over. The one you listen to on a regular basis to allow the subliminal message to work its magic. Alright, we have that baseball in there. The next step is to record an affirmation. So up on the Audacity toolbar, we have the record button. We'll go ahead and click that. Create our affirmation. I created one from all around. I succeed in manifesting. I appreciate how the universe had provided me with the finances and everything I need. So, this right here is our recorded affirmation, so we want just to go ahead and repeat over and over, so I'll highlight it up here and copy and paste it. As soon as I paste it with Ctrl V, I'm pressing the right arrow key, over and over, now this affirmation is being recorded throughout the length of the song. Now the key thing about affirmations is, we don't want to hear it. You will take the volume down about 15 seconds. The next step, we're going to export it. Be free for all, name the file, sounds, save it to the desktop. You can keep all that, you can change it and we'll export it, and then you'll have your MP3 with subliminal recording behind it. Thank you.
Yes folks, it is that simple and it's free. Your very own homemade subliminal messaging audio file that you can customize to start brainwashing yourself on purpose. Wild. Oh, and by the way, that program he was using is called Audacity and it is free. So that means, the Audacity is that now anyone can download it for free and create their very own subliminal messages to their heart's content. Can you believe this? It is so commonplace, we now have free online tutorials and free programs showing anyone how to brainwash themselves for free. Wild. And if you listen to the marketing companies of these subliminal audio messages, they are pitching these things as the cure-all for any ailment. They say they will fix everything for you, while you just sit there and allow yourself to be brainwashed by them. Don't believe me? Here is just a small sampling of the marketing messages out there describing how self-help subliminal audio messages can change your life without any effort.
Boost your self-esteem and feel great. 9-hour sleep subliminal session. Extremely powerful self-esteem subliminal affirmations. Program your subconscious mind. Practice excellent self-care. Subliminal affirmations and relaxing nature sounds. Self-help. Positive thoughts, successfully improving yourself, subliminal positive affirmations. Build up your confidence, positive subliminal affirmations for self-esteem. Confidence, happiness and motivation. Binaural beats and isochronic tones subliminal messages. Stop negative thoughts. Be positive with subliminal messages. Enhance self-love. Healing music 528 Hz. Positive energy cleanse. Ancient frequency music. Motivation to get things done. Subliminal message session. Be positive and learn to love yourself 10-hour rain sound. Sleep subliminal. Rapid self-growth. Improve yourself and life fast positive subliminal affirmations. I believe in myself, attract opportunities, overcome self-doubt, subliminal affirmations. Self-love affirmations reprogram your mind while you sleep. Self-love and self-esteem nightstream subliminal affirmations binaural beat meditation music. Subliminal self-love self-esteem affirmations delta waves for a peaceful sleep. Subliminal self-help develop your intuition for men. Ultimate self-improvement combo subliminal. Let go of your guilt and forgive yourself. Binaural beats and isochronic tones subliminal messages. Powerful, confidence-spoken affirmations with binaural tones for healthy self-esteem. Ultimate confidence with people with subliminal messages.
Now, as wild as that sounds and as commonplace as that is, people brainwashing themselves with subliminal audio messages, not waiting for the elite to do it for them, what about the rest of us? You know, those of us who refuse to go along with this unfortunate trend of self-induced, mind-altering, brainwashing procedures with subliminal audio messages? Are we safe? Well, again, you're assuming we even have a choice with these elites and that they aren't already doing this to us on a global scale with radio. But would they really do that? Would they use subliminal messages in radio broadcasts across the world to brainwash us? Well, if you do the research, secret radio broadcasts, even on a global scale, are nothing new. In fact, they have been used for decades on whole populations. They are called number stations. Let's take a look at that.
During World War II, the BBC would include personal messages in its broadcasts of news and entertainment to occupied Europe.
Often, they were coded messages intended for secret agents.
Such messages were also used to authenticate agents to sources of assistance in the field. The agent would arrange to have the BBC broadcast any short phrase the other person chose. In the mid-20th century, the high-frequency radio bands were used by numerous stations sending seemingly random Morse code, usually in five-letter groups. As more advanced communications methods, such as teleprinter and satellite, took over, another type appeared that transmitted spoken, and also, seemingly random number and letter groups. Although there has been no official confirmation beyond a 1998 article in the Daily Telegraph which quoted a spokesperson for the Department of Trade and Industry as saying, "These number stations are what you suppose they are.
People should not be mystified by them. They are primarily used to send messages to spies and other clandestine agents.
They are simply mysterious radio stations broadcasting secret messages which you can tune into at home, and they have been transmitting, in some cases, for decades around the world. The transmissions themselves have an eerie air, featuring at times clunky automated voices, at others quaintly dated human voices, rambling streams of numbers that, at first, seem like ghostly gibberish.
At times, these are accompanied by music or weird sound effects, as seen here.
The VHS vlog.
Ever since I was a little kid, I have loved radio.
I remember getting one of those FM car transmitters that allowed you to play your music over the radio station in the car.
That was the coolest thing to me.
I joined a student radio club at the university where I learned radio etiquette and how to put together a proper show.
Even though it was just an internet show for the time being.
But lately I've been taking to the airwaves and looking into the deeper, darker side of radio.
Specifically, one station that I found to be intriguing and troubling. A station that consistently beams its transmissions towards the United States. A station seemingly meant for only for those who can decode it. It is called HM01. There are odd transmissions.
Some of these are radio beacons, high-powered transmitters that only send out a repeated sound that will allow you to gauge how good broadcasting conditions are at any given time. But be looking at the right place and the right time and you might find a station that only broadcasts seemingly only random numbers in a computerized voice. 315, 315, 315, these are the number stations. The Gong station was operated by East German intelligence and broadcast to Stasi agents in the West from 1959 to 1990. Messages would open with a series of chimes that were followed by a woman shouting out coded number groups corresponding to times and places of designated drop points for active spies. One known listener was an Air Force printer, Joachim Pube, who copied and handed off over 16,000 sensitive documents. After broadcasts ended with reunification, it is believed the KGB took over operations using other hidden German transmitters. Backwards music, despite its name, the backwards music station transmits what is believed to be encoded tones instead of music. The signals are comprised of sweeping low-pitched and repeating sounds not known to follow any schedule and never repeated in any pattern. Government or military involvement is suspected as messages appear to be sent during major geopolitical events. It is theorized that the station's messages are broadcasted in a compressed format that creates the distorted sound. Lincolnshire Poacher. Evidence suggests that Lincolnshire Poacher began operating in the 1970s and was transmitted from the island of Cyprus. Broadcasts initiate with electronically produced notes to the tune of Lincolnshire Poacher, an English folk song followed by a cheery automated female voice with a noticeable upward inflection for the last numbers in a group. The station is believed to have been maintained and operated by M16, the British Intelligence Service, until 2008. Transmissions were sent simultaneously on three different frequencies to thwart heavy jamming attempt, most notably from Iran. Swedish Rhapsody. Swedish Rhapsody is a Polish state security station believed to have been transmitted out of Poland since the late 1950s. Transmissions were signaled with the Luxembourg Polka, often mistakenly identified as Swedish Rhapsody No. 1, and communicated 100 number groups in an automated voice, also often mistakenly identified as that of a little girl. The voice is thought to have been generated by tweaking the pitch of a Stasi Sprach machine and was used until 1998, when it was replaced with the same American female voice used by CIA handlers on their Cynthia station. The buzzer MDZHB, UVB-76, the buzzer or UVB-76 is a Russian station that may have actually operated as UZB-76 until 2010, when it became MDZHB. MDZHB continually broadcasts a 1.25 seconds buzzing tone followed by a 1.85 seconds pause, occasionally interrupted by live voice transmissions in a Russian military code format known as monolith. While some listeners insist variations in the buzzing represent a numbers code, the tones may instead be a channel marker. The voices are thought to relay secret orders for military units who decrypt the messages via code books kept in a safe. Hanglands, the closest thing we have to prove that these stations are the work of spy network comes from Jack Barsky, ex-KBG spy that now lives in Pennsylvania. He explains that every night he would receive a radiogram from Russia giving him useful information on what to do next. Every night at 9:15, Barsky would tune into a shortwave radio in his apartment in Queens and listen for a transmission that he believed came from Cuba. Barsky, all the messages were encrypted, they became digits, and the digits would be sent over in groups of five, and sometimes it took a good hour just to write it all down and 3 hours to decipher. The Connet Project, recordings of shortwave number stations. In the 1990s, Joaquin Fernandez began recording these number stations and compiled them into an album known as the Connet Project. Most of the stations in this project are now off-air, having served their purpose in the Cold War. But today there are still new stations popping up, and this is where I discovered this station, HMO1. You just have to hope that the messages aren't giving instructions to partake in any devastating activities. While number stations are the focus of myriad conspiracies and explanations, the most widely held theory about these stations is that they are a means by which intelligence agencies can communicate with assets around the world, who can receive these coded messages securely, using nothing more elaborate than a household radio. But number stations are very professionally operated. They broadcast sometimes in the same formats for decades. They are clearly not being run, in those particular cases, by one person. They usually broadcast from high-powered transmitters, too. So, in all other respects, they are not like pirate stations, they are more like the sort of thing that would be run by a well-funded organization. Researching into number stations led into reading about some pretty dark activities undertaken by intelligence agencies of all nationalities and ideologies. I think what concerns me even more than these specific activities, though, is the general sense of this world as one which is almost totally lacking in accountability. Whether you look at a Cold War dictatorship or a contemporary democracy, there is a real sense that some of these agencies operate like a state within the state, above democratic oversight, and really beyond the control of politicians. The response of lots of people to that will be, well, yeah, obviously these things need to be secret, and they will defend that, and the power these agencies hold, by pointing out the role they play in protecting us, protecting democracy and so on. But it seems a pretty scary line of reasoning to me that the only way to defend democracy is by having something inherently undemocratic at its core. Other intended recipients of secret broadcasts have faster and easier to use equipment at their disposal, and these messages are also indicators of the proximity of intelligence work to our everyday lives. It is known that these stations have been seemingly allowed, in some cases for a very long time, to operate like this. That idea of taking a technology, a coercive technology, and turning it back on the people who built it is very interesting. Certainly, imaging satellites, for example, are very much the direct descendants of spy satellites. In some cases, commercial satellites are still used by intelligence agencies. I also think it is very interesting that, especially in the wake of the Snowden revelations, something we think is so distant from our lives is actually all around us, pretty much every minute. Right now, there are probably signals we could harvest if we knew how. In other words, who knows what they are really doing with all these radio broadcasts going on around the world that a select few group of people know about and control. It starts to remind me of that movie scene we saw earlier. Let's revisit that. The opening clip of the movie, They Live, shows the main character with a box full of sunglasses. He is searching through this box in front of the overflowing garbage cans.
This box of glasses seems to have been put out with the trash. As he searches through the box, he finds a pair of nice-looking glasses and puts them in his pocket.
He looks around to see if anyone noticed him and then closes the box and puts the box of glasses in the trash can and covers it with paper.
As he proceeds to walk down the street, he puts the glasses on, but as he sees the ground through the glasses, he stops in amazement. Something is not right. He takes the glasses off and looks around the street. He puts the glasses back on, and the sign reads "Obey." But, when he takes them off again, the sign has a normal advertisement.
He tries it again. He puts the glasses on and looks at the sign, and it again reads "Obey." This is weird.
He takes the glasses off and places his hand over his eyes. This cannot be real.
He puts the glasses back on and looks at a different sign that is advertising a trip to the Caribbean, but this sign reads in bold print "Marry and Reproduce."
He walks a little farther down the street and comes to a men's apparel shop.
Even though the sign reads the name of the store, when he puts on the glasses, the same sign reads "No Independent Thought," and a smaller sign in the window reads "Consume."
Without the glasses, the same little sign read "Close Out Sale."
Trying to figure out what is going on, he looks down the street, puts the glasses back on, and all the signs are different. In bold print, they are telling the public "Work 8 hours, sleep 8 hours, play 8 hours, watch TV, buy, submit, conform, and stay asleep." He then walks past a magazine stand, and again there are signs saying "Watch TV and buy and stay asleep and submit and no thought."
He picks up a magazine and looks inside. All the same words are in there except for one additional statement: "Do not question authority." When he takes the glasses off and looks at the pages again, they are normal articles. While he is flipping through the pages, he put the glasses back on and a man steps up to also look at the magazines.
As he looks up at the man, he is shocked to see an alien being staring back at him, and the alien asks, "What's your problem?" He realizes he is staring at this alien, so he takes the glasses off, and the alien is now a normal human dressed in a nice business suit.
The man in the suit repeats, "I said, what's your problem?"
As the man walks off, he pays the clerk for the magazine and then turns back to look at the man with the glasses.
Looking through the glasses, this man is now an alien again. The alien takes his change and walks to his car and leaves. In unbelief, he stands there in shock.
The clerk comes over to him and says, "Hey buddy, you going to pay for that or what?" The clerk is normal looking, but the money in his hand has printed on it "This is your God." The clerk continues, "Listen buddy, I don't want no hassle today.
Either pay for it or put it back."
He puts the magazine back and turns to walk away.
Yeah, sleep is right, with some sort of subliminal radio broadcast going on there. Good thing that was just a movie for our entertainment, and there is no way that aliens, I mean rich elites, would ever produce a massive subliminal radio broadcast across the world telling people to subliminally sleep, 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 buy, 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 obey, 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 consume whatever. Yeah, right. And I quote,
"There's a number station that has broadcasted a continuous pulse for about 40 years.
Gee, I wonder what it is saying. What message is it broadcasting? But they wouldn't do that, would they? Well, I don't know about you, but based on what we've seen so far with these elites and their secretive manipulative behavior in just the first two forms of media we're looking at, newspaper and radio, do you really put it past them? Can you really trust them? Based on their deceptive, dishonest behavior, I would not put it past them. In fact, I personally think it's already being done on a massive scale that we would totally, frankly, freak out over, if we could see just how big this subliminal web is that they've woven across the planet. And we have not even gotten to the other global forms of media out there that we'll also be dealing with. The facts are, our thoughts, our behavior are being subliminally altered on a massive scale using the power of mass media, including newspaper and radio. And as we saw earlier, we saw the results of it by the kids who admitted what we adults refuse to admit, that the media, including radio, really does entice us to think and do certain things that we otherwise would not think or do. Let's take a look at that again.
They tell you to smoke, drink beer. They can make you buy toys and make you buy cigarettes and beer. I feel that they want me to smoke or maybe drink. Bad language. Saying bad words. False language. A radio speaker announcer says bad words can make people do bad things. On KDWB Tone E, Fly is sick. Swearing in commercials. Songs on the radio like On the Edge and 93.x. There are too many killings. There is way too much violence and causes me to think that most people are like that. Too much violence and doing too much drugs. It scares me. It influences me to have bad nightmares. It says everyone wants to be skinny, so I want to be skinny. It makes you feel that you have to be beautiful in order to be a good person. Lies and too much sex. It causes people to think everybody is doing it. Guns and violence, bad examples. A lot of violence and killing. It has caused me to be more violent in some of my actions. It has changed me to be not so nice. It says, do what you want to do and don't listen. It has made me make bad choices and do something I thought was right that is really wrong. They make you buy things. Candy. I think they are trying to get you to buy something. We can be influenced. It gives some people false images. It draws conclusions about people that might not be true. It has caused me to swear more often. Lots of foul language. Swearing on the radio. It causes me to have a bad attitude toward my parents.
Gee, I wonder why society is getting so wicked like the Bible warned about 2,000 years ago, as a sign you're living in the last days. In fact, speaking of another last days warning from God, we also see, with radio, not just newspapers, how people are also being conditioned to specifically scoff at the things of God as well. Let's take a look at that proof from radio.
Tax-funded anti-Christian bigotry on NPR. As a subsidiary of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, National Public Radio is bound by congressional mandate for strict adherence to objectivity and balance in all programs or series of programs of a controversial nature. But public radio sometimes falls short of this standard, particularly when reporting on topics dealing with religion, and particularly Christians and/or Christians in politics. Two programs described below are examples of how some NPR staff members' apparent disdain for Christianity is finding its way into publicly funded radio programming. One is an NPR news program and the other a privately funded documentary that has aired under NPR auspices. All Things Considered chronicled a controversy in Colorado Springs. The story was about some parents who objected to their children being baptized without their parents' knowledge during a local church carnival. The controversy was real, and the conflict is compelling. However, NPR's handling of the story was anything but even-handed. After a straightforward introduction by host Linda Wertheimer, reporter Ansel Martinez set the stage by describing Colorado Springs as a city where parents could raise their children in safe, wholesome surroundings. Martinez went on to note that many Christian organizations have settled in the city at the behest of civic leaders, but now some people in Colorado Springs feel the city has become a place of religious extremism. A parent was interviewed, relating how she was surprised to learn that her twin daughters had been baptized during a church carnival without her knowledge. She said other parents, too, were upset. The church pastor, Dean Miller of Cornerstone Baptist Church, was given one opportunity to defend his church, and was followed by a remarkable commentary from reporter Martinez. This isn't the first time the religious right and opposing groups have faced off against each other in Colorado Springs. The police department is reviewing a citizen's complaint that last month an off-duty patrolman was distributing religious literature to a mentally disabled man. Last year, a self-described born-again public school teacher was demoted when she showed graphic abortion films to seventh graders. Martinez then quoted a liberal activist from a group called Citizens Project, who took another unanswered slam at the theological conservatism now in evidence in Colorado Springs. The story ended with a summary of the legal actions taken by four parents against the church, and a paraphrased statement by the pastor that the controversy had not hurt the church. This NPR report is interesting for several reasons. The opening remarks by the reporter clearly imply that children are no longer safe in Colorado Springs because of the presence of Christian groups. Christian activity, any activity, is equated with the religious right, a political term used by groups such as People for the American Way, to discredit conservative and politically active Christians. Linking the baptism of children to the political realm is a way to politicize basic Christian practices. An abortion film is described as graphic, a word that implies that the children viewing the film are at risk. NPR routinely avoids use of such terms as graphic when reporting on the use of sexually explicit materials in sex education and AIDS-oriented safe sex curricula. No spokesmen are included to combat the anonymous charge that Colorado Springs is fraught with religious extremism. The Citizens Project is said to be a liberal volunteer organization that promotes communication and understanding between its members and conservative Christians. However, on another program aired on National Public Radio, which also was openly biased against Christians, the Citizens Project is described as a watchdog organization that gives citizens a sense of belonging by organizing opposition to the Christian agenda. In Jesus' Name, The Politics of Bigotry, produced and narrated by Barbara Bernstein, is described as an in-depth investigation of the Christian right, providing an inside look at the motivation, strategies, and agenda of the movement. In Jesus' Name portrays the Christian right as bigots who support hatred and violence and have a far-reaching agenda. The series was funded by the Paul Robeson Fund and sponsored by KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, and distributed by the far-left Pacifica Radio. It aired around the nation on various stations under the banner of National Public Radio. The 2.5-hour documentary contains interviews with representatives of Christian groups and experts and watchdog groups that monitor the Christian right. Christians are not given the opportunity to respond to the majority of statements and conclusions made by their detractors. The Christian right is defined in the program by Sarah Diamond, the author of Spiritual Warfare, The Politics of the Christian Right, as average people who have a certain worldview that they want to impose on the rest of society, people who are very threatened by the real uncertainty going on in society. Project Toxin spokesman Gary Sloan says, the kids that graduated from their Christian schools voted for George Bush, laughs. And the youngster that they enroll today will be voting for some other conservative and be just as bigoted 15 years from now. As one Christian says, the trickle-down morality doesn't work. We need a bubbling-up type of morality among the masses. There are bubbling sound effects in the background which continue a few seconds after he has finished speaking. Several other interviews with Christians are accompanied by menacing and eerie music. Bernstein says, Focus on the Family is a large and influential Christian rights ministry that hides behind a facade of being a social service agency. Focus on the Family is not given the opportunity to respond to the statement. He says that Citizens Project grew from 5 people to 6,000 concerned citizens who watch and oppose the Christian right. Following that statement, several people from Citizens Project state their concern about the takeover by the Christian right. A major portion of the documentary is spent discussing the Christian right's response to homosexual activism, with little Christian input. Christians are compared to Hitler, the Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and male chauvinists. Christians are given one opportunity to respond to the comparisons, and that argument is sandwiched between obscene and hate-filled statements supposedly made by a Christian. According to the documentary, Christians have no empirical studies or data to back their position. And if there is evidence, it is based solely on discredited and falsified research. Some of the other elements of the program include: the only thing Christians are called to be completely intolerant of are people who are hypocrites. Hypocrites are condemned in the Bible, but homosexuals are not, says one interviewee. Bernstein states that Christians have no biblical support for their non-acceptance of homosexual activity. The Christian right doesn't understand the gays, like Hitler didn't understand the Jews, says Lois Van Leer, a lesbian activist. She goes on to say, the Christian right says hatred against homosexuals is okay. If you look at the statewide and national figures, it is at an all-time high. The number of incidents of hate crimes is not cited by an independent observer, but by homosexual activist groups who have a vested interest in seeing higher numbers. According to the Washington Post, after passage of Colorado's Amendment 2, which prevented localities from enacting special rights for homosexuals, there was a reported 10% drop in hate crimes against homosexuals compared to the previous year at the same time. And the mayor's office in Denver reports that anti-homosexual hate crimes show little or no increase this year or last. Likewise, in the District of Columbia, a report from the mayor's office summarizing hate crimes for a 4-year period lists only 10 anti-homosexual hate crimes. The data that are available do not show an epidemic of anti-homosexual hate crimes as Van Leer would have us believe. Kathleen Sadat, a homosexual rights activist, says, to attack homosexuality is to try to make some people stay within their places, male and female. The ultimate goal of the Christian right is to ensure that men stay superior, that men are the driving and controlling force for society, especially white men. The Christian right wants to be in charge and get to say who is in the human race. According to several lesbian activists in Colorado, the Christian right is based on militant religious fundamentals and tries to control women and deny civil rights to blacks, Hispanics, and homosexuals. According to the experts, the Christian right also supports hatred and violence against homosexuals. After the passage of Colorado's Amendment 2, which denies homosexuals special minority rights, one lesbian activist says, because the state can discriminate, it must be okay to yell at gays and lesbians as they walk down the street, or to shoot queers or even stab us. An obscene and threatening phone call and an obscene and violent confrontation with a lesbian are attributed to the Christian right. The clips used are of similar voices, and it is not explained who said it or how the clips were obtained. The documentary ends with Lois Van Leer saying, "What motivates the Christian right is that they think they are doing God's work. Our only hope is that the liberals, the left, the progressives, the grassroots people can find something they can find in their core that says, I have to act." In conclusion, it is inappropriate for public funds to be spent airing religious bigotry. In Jesus' name, the politics of bigotry is, in fact, a clear violation of First Amendment protections against infringement on free exercise of religion. In the All Things Considered segment, Christian activity itself is equated with the religious right, a media-created monolith deliberately concocted to smear pro-family activists or even agnostic researchers who document the health risks of the homosexual lifestyle. Both programs are evidence of a bias against Christianity. And where is this being aired? On radio. Gee, I wonder why people are getting so antagonistic towards the things of God and Christians, Christianity in general? Why are they scoffing so much as Jesus specifically said in the Bible? I mean, here we thought it was just a coincidence, when in reality, it's because certain elites are using the power of global media like newspapers and now even radio, to mesmerize the minds of the masses, and subliminally induce an attitude and mindset of scoffing and mocking and even hatred towards the things of God. Where have I heard that before? It's all just in time to produce the unfortunate wicked, scoffing, rebellious society that the Bible said would appear on the scene when you're living in the last days. But that's only half of the ways radio is being used by these aliens, I mean rich elites around the world, to seduce, alter, and modify our thinking and behavior with subliminal audio messaging. You see, it is not just radio news reports and radio talk shows that they're doing this with. It's also with the music they're playing on these radio stations around the world. Believe it or not, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but these elites are using music, right now, to subliminally seduce us into submission and reprogram our minds to do and obey whatever it is they want us to do or obey. And it's being done on a massive global scale in a multitude of ways. Let's take a look at that musical subliminal seduction that's going on. First of all, we've already seen several times how music and audio tracks are already being used on us with subliminal messages to affect our thinking, thoughts, beliefs, buying habits, etc. Now let's dive a little deeper into this musical subliminal seduction technique called backmasking that's been out there for quite some time. Contrary to popular belief, it has not gone away. Rather, as you will see in a moment, it is being used on us, still to this day, in a massive way all over the planet. Backmasking, unmasked. Creepy, demonic, scary and odd. These are few but precise words that are used to describe backmasking, a technical effect that usually happens when vinyl records of the past are played in reverse and reportedly bring forth enigmatic and subliminal audio messages, whether or not they were deliberately placed on it. Backmasking is a process of reversing an audio signal and placing it in something meant to be played forwards. When played normally, the message will sound like a normal music. However, once the song is played in reverse, subliminal messages can be heard. Remember, these covert messages on records could only be heard when it is played backwards. Backmasking traces its roots as far back to 1877 when Thomas Alva Edison, inventor of the phonograph and the incandescent light bulb printer among other things, noticed how music had a reverse sound and called it novel and sweet but although different. Soon, the 50s saw avant-garde musicians started to purposely include reverse audio into their music. As a controversy, backmasking peaked in the 70s and 80s, but satanic backmasking persisted in the U.S. during the 90s because some Christian groups alleged how backmasking was being used by renowned rock musicians for satanic purposes, leading to record burning protests. Veiled messages and music come in different forms, and one that has been deliberately placed onto the record, for enhanced musical effect, usually by the recording studio, is called backward masking, while backmasking is the term used when messages are not deliberately put into a record but has rather formed into cryptic words which can be discovered or heard when played backward. Both can be collectively referred to as backmasking. In backmasking, our brain uses the waveform and changes in volume and other aspects of the sound to extract musical information. When it is listened in reverse, the lack of familiarity with the sound structure makes it sound frightening, strange, and even diabolic. And perhaps one of the first controversial backmasking was the Beatles' Revolution 9 song, where Paul's A Dead Man could be heard when one of the songs was played in reverse. So, can we thank the Beatles for moving the technique of backmasking into the mainstream? And do you know what really skulks behind the rearward grooves in Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven? Stairway to Heaven played forward. If there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alarmed now. It's just a spring clean from the May Queen. Yes, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. The same verse played backward. Here's to my sweet Satan. The one whose little path would make me sad, whose power is Satan. He'll give those with him 666. There was a little tool shed where he made us suffer, sad Satan. 10. It was reported that in the 70s and 80s, phrases like here's to my sweet Satan, serve me, and there's no escaping it were decoded in 1981. Because of these, Christian groups, during that time immediately labeled iconic rock bands like Queen, Kiss, and Styx indeed have a repertoire of evil music. Other examples soon surfaced like John Lennon's How Do You Sleep, Hidden Message, Hey Poor Lindy. So, Mean, Gets Him Nowhere, Marilyn Manson's, I'm Gonna File My Claim, He'll Come Out, Full of Magic, The Beatles' famous Help, Now He Uses Marijuana, Judas Priest's Beyond the Realms of Death, I Took My Life, and even Elvis Presley's It's Now or Never, which had the hidden message, They Know I'm Sick. As far as actual satanic messages hidden within a song, this backmasking Satanism connection can be traced to a 1913 book by occultist Aleister Crowley, who recommended that those fascinated in black magic would do well to learn how to think and speak backward, stating that in the Middle Ages, which is used to pray the Lord's Prayer backward. This sounds kind of sinister, but despite all of these controversies, backmasking continued in a different medium, and in fact, the first backmasked video was released as part of a Grammy Award promotional campaign launched in 2014.
In other words, it's still going on to this day whether people realize it or not or believe in it or not. In fact, so much so, are they using backmasking and that they are pretty blatant about it. They've even started producing top 10 lists of backmasking and subliminal messages used in modern music, in effect, admitting that they're really still using this technology on us, right on up to this day. And not just in their music, but even the music videos as well.
Rebecca Felgate, Massachusetts, here are the top 10 scary subliminal messages in songs. 10. Justin Bieber and the Illuminati. In 2015, Justin Bieber released a music video for Where Are You Now, in which thousands of images were flashed on the Canadian pop star. It seems the images were drawn at the JACU headquarters and overlaid, or were they? Either way, if you pause the video at opportune moments, you can see a lot of Illuminati images imposed over the star and also satanic images.
Phrases like hand jobs for God. Awkward.
These flash before your eyes really quickly, but psychologically speaking, but can we pick up on them?
What about the children? What are they seeing?
9. David Bowie.
Foreshadowing his own death.
I loved this album, Black Star. It came out on the 8th of January 2016, David's 69th and last ever birthday.
Sadly, he died 2 days later.
The public was totally shocked because Bowie had never referenced his illness, or had he? The title song of the album was released on the 19th of November 2015, and a second track, Lazarus, was released on December 17th. Both tracks heavily foreshadow the star's untimely death. In Black Star, Bowie appears to be singing about the day of a death, with a candle-lit vigil. It is probably him singing about his own final reckoning as he writes, "Something happened on the day he died, his spirit rose a meter and then stepped aside.
Somebody else took his place and bravely cried."
he goes on to sing, "I'm a black star.
I'm not a pop star." People have deciphered this to mean the passing of icon status to another.
David Bowie is a black star, a dead star. Again, in Lazarus, he appears to be eulogizing himself. He sings, "Look up here, I'm in heaven."
He also sings that just like a bluebird, he will be free.
The music video for the track, which came out 3 weeks before his death, makes things visually pretty clear, too.
When listening and watching now, it is so obvious Bowie knew he was going to die, and that the album was a very self-aware final farewell from one of the greatest musical icons of all time.
8. Ash. The popular 90s and noughties rock band wanted to jump on the bandwagon of backmasking and included a little nod to Satan in their song Evil Eye. Released in 2004 in the album Meltdown, Evil Eye is a song that sounds like it is about a girl that is working her way into a guy's head, so much so that he can't stop thinking about her. Like I said though, there is a scary secret message that is actually a bit rude. At the beginning of the track, if played backwards, lead singer Timothy James Arthur can be heard to say, "She's giving me the evil eye, suck Satan's rock."
Except, he doesn't say rock.
7.
Judas Priest.
Judas Priest had to go to court over this song, "Better By You, Better Than Me." So "Better By You, Better Than Me" was originally by a rock band, Spooky Tooth, but it was covered by Judas Priest in 1978, and the later English metal band version was pretty popular in its day. While some loved the power rock track, others were convinced it was riddled with hidden satanic messages and it was behind a spate of suicides.
Some said that the track had the phrase "Let's Be Dead" hidden in it.
The track was reportedly behind the suicide attempts of 19-year-old Ray Belknap, who killed himself, and 20-year-old James Vance in Reno, Nevada, in 1985, who also tried in a double suicide.
Now Ray shot himself under his chin and died instantly.
James survived but was severely disfigured and overdosed 3 years later.
His parents claimed that the cursed track made the young men do it. Before James overdosed, he gave an interview to say that actually the music was what made him crazy.
The 3-week trial was heavily scrutinized by the music industry, but Judas Priest did have to appear in court and eventually it was thrown out. So, I guess the scary thing about this hidden message is that I was singing it at the top of my voice a lot without realizing what I was saying. 6.
Foo Fighters.
I enjoyed a bit of Foo Fighters, and I certainly did back in 2002, when this Grammy Award-winning song came out, "All My Life."
Young teen, me was all about heavy rock.
I remember screaming the lyrics to this at Reading, 2005. Anyway, lead singer Dave Grohl said in an interview that the song is about his keenness to perform oral sex.
5. The Eagles.
I went to California and passed by the alleged Hotel California.
It was great.
This is another one of those songs that sounds upbeat, and California makes me think of sunny times and sunny climes.
But apparently not. Apparently, this song is about yielding to Satan.
So, I heard Shane Dawson talk about this one and he seemed really freaked out, but honestly, I'm not too sure. Allegedly, when played backwards you can hear something along the lines of, "Yes, Satan organized his own religion," and when played forwards the song also seems to be pretty devil heavy. The lyrics go, "And in the master's chambers, they gathered for the feast, they stab it with their steely forks, but they just can't kill the beast."
Interesting.
4.
The Beatles.
These songs, "I'm So Tired" and "Revolution 9" added fuel to the fire of the Paul is Dead conspiracy. Back in 1966, fans of the Beatles became convinced that Paul McCartney died in a car crash. The Beatles were known to add in cheeky back mask messages for their fans, but this was something different. Fans swear that clues of Paul's death are littered through Sgt. Pepper and the White Album. At the end of "I'm So Tired," it is thought that John Lennon says, "Paul is a dead man,
I miss him, miss him, miss him."
On "Revolution No. 9, an announcer's voice says "number 9 a lot. When played backwards, it is thought that it said, "Turn me on, dead man."
Strange. 3. The Police.
"Every Breath You Take" seems like a sweet song.
It often is played in the top 10 most played romantic songs of all time. But no, if you truly listen to the lyrics, it is much more sinister.
"Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take,
I'll be watching you.
Every single day, every word you say, every game you play, every night you stay, I'll be watching you."
Creepy. It turns out that Sting wrote this song after breaking up with his wife and is depicting an obsessive stalker. This song was the most heard song in the United States for 8 weeks in 1983. How many maniacs did it inspire? Sting later said he wrote the song "If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free." 2. Led Zeppelin. It was widely rumored in the 1980s that rock band Led Zeppelin were backmasking secret evil messages in their music. In 1981, Christian DJ Michael Mills began stating on Christian radio programs that Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven contained hidden satanic messages that were heard by the unconscious mind and was secretly indoctrinating people into becoming Satanists. This was corroborated by the parents' Music Resource Center. According to an alarming number of sources, Stairway to Heaven, when played backwards, says, "Here's to my sweet Satan, he will give those with him 666. There was a little toolshed where he made us suffer, sad Satan." 1. Foster the People. Pumped Up Kicks, "I really like this song, it just sounds like a nice upbeat indie track, until you find yourself singing, you better run, outrun my bullet." Wait, what? That's right, if you actually listen to the lyrics, things are pretty dark. The opening verse goes, "Robert's got a quick hand. He'll look around the room, he won't tell you his plan. He just rolled a cigarette, hanging out of his mouth, he's a cowboy kid. Yeah, he found a six-shooter in his dad's closet hidden, oh, a box of fun things, I don't even know what, but he is coming for you, yeah, he's coming for you." The popular 2011 song is actually written from the perspective of a psychotic kid with homicidal thoughts. Basically, a high school student thinking of enacting a mass shooting. It really is surprising when I found, but it made me think, why am I not listening to the lyrics? It's obvious if you stop and think about it.
Yeah. It's obvious you should listen to the lyrics and whatever else you're listening to or watching, because these guys really are, and they admit it, still using subliminal messages and backmasking messages in their music right on up to this day. Yet, most people act like it's not going on and continue to ingest these subliminal messages into their minds on a massive scale, and you wonder why people behave and do the things they do today. Including mass shootings, suicide, sexual immorality, glamorizing Satan, blaspheming God, and on it goes. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Yeah, right. How much more proof do you need? We are being subliminally told to act like this, via the music. In fact, think about what we're dealing with here. Now we get to add to the list of media that the elites are using on us to give rise to the last day's society of wickedness and scoffing. It is not just newspapers and radio, but the whole music industry itself that's doing it. These aliens, I mean rich elites, are having a heyday. In fact, it has been long established that music itself, let alone the words or lyrics attached to it, have a profound effect on people. You can manipulate them in all kinds of ways. And if you don't believe me, just ask the musicians themselves. They admit it. How easy it is to emotionally manipulate someone with music simply by the order in which you play it in.
Narrator. To understand the effects of music more clearly, I spoke to two top professional musicians. Wurzel, the lead guitarist of heavy metal group Motorhead, who worked for 12 years in concerts around the world. I also spoke to Rudy Dobson, a top keyboard player. He has performed with some of the biggest bands and musical artists in the world, including the Bangles, Bee Gees, Billy Joel, Foreigner, and with Paul Simon. Rudy talked to me about the effects of music on the audience. How through careful planning, the musicians can manipulate an audience by creating the right emotional atmosphere. Rudy Dobson. You can get different emotions through sounds if you are in a stadium and you are playing a heavy rock track. 90% of the time people will be jumping up and down, clapping their hands. If you are playing a more serious track, you will see they are probably waving their hands in the air very slowly and so on. According to what track it is. You also have to think of the people, at the possible concert, that wouldn't wave their hands in the air, they would just be sitting there and listening to it in a different way. Wurzel. Well, I played with Motorhead for 12 years, professionally. And I went around the world 6 times with the band. We played all over the world. We could play in Japan, we could play in Germany, we could play in Czechoslovakia, play in Brazil, play everywhere, all in different languages. The reaction we got from everywhere, every time we played, was all exactly the same. They look the same. They jump up and down the same, they throw up their arms in the same way. It's not the same language, but they all recognize the music and have the same atmosphere about it. Rudy Dobson. It is easy to get a reaction from your audience from the music you play in a particular concert that you play. In one of the bands, we were told to play certain sets in order to arouse the audience at certain times during the concert. We would have a very powerful track at the beginning to get people emotionally high so that they get geared up for the rest of the concert. Then you can bring a less powerful number through and then you bring back the high gain to pump up their heartbeat. It's like a pulse. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up and then at the end it goes straight up to the top. It induces a reaction from the audience, i.e., the drug, and the track dominates who you are. Again, the soft drum part will make people more relaxed, and the heavy drum part will bring people up. You will see they jump and wave their hands in the air through the whole bit.
And that whole bit is a carefully staged emotional manipulation of people using music, whether they realize it or not. And folks, that's just music itself. Now throw in the lyrics and the backmasking and the subliminal messaging that is also in there, and you have a powerful media tool to add to your arsenal to mesmerize the minds of the masses. Hands down, even secular researchers admit that music is one of the most powerful ways to mold, shape, and manipulate people into thinking or behaving however you want them to. Check this out.
Music is as powerful as television for people in general. The American Medical Association concluded that music is a greater influence in the life of teenagers than television. The average teenager listens to 10,500 hours of music during the years between the 7th and 12th grades, and thus music surpasses television as an influence in teenagers' lives. One person stated that, "Songs are more than mere mirrors of society, they are a potent force in the shaping of it." Studies have found that consumers of music with harmful themes increases discomfort in family situations, a preference for friends over family, and poor academic performance. Oddly enough, surveys found that more teenagers than adults believe that popular music encourages antisocial behavior. Some popular music remains part of the cultural virus that can lead some young people to violence. One Drive testified in U.S. Senate hearings that tons of research have been done on the interrelationship of music and human behavior. He simply says that music affects our moods, our attitudes, our emotions, and our behavior.
It's basically the old adage, junk in equals junk out. You listen to music that puts in junky bad words, thoughts, and suggestions into your mind, then wonder of wonders, what's it starts to do? It starts to produce junk out or bad behavior. These elites know what they are doing. But for those of you who still persist that music doesn't really have an effect on our moods, attitudes, emotions, and behavior, let's take a look at how it's influenced these people. Is this copycat behavior they are demonstrating from listening to music a mere coincidence? You be the judge.
Alex McNamara, in tonight's news we will be examining the controversial question, can the music we listen to affect our lifestyles? Would you be willing to tell us who your favorite bands are? Concert attendees, Nirvana, Oyster Cult, Jesus Lizard, Robert Smith, Smashing Pumpkins. Alex McNamara, do you think these songs have in any way affected your values or in any way have affected the way you live your life? Concert attendees, it's just music, man. We just listen to the music, that's all. As they are answering questions, they are smoking and can hardly stand alone. They are actually leaning on each other to keep standing. Their eyes are just barely open to see the guy that is asking them questions. They are dressed in black with multiple chains hanging around their necks. Alex McNamara, would like to tell our viewers which bands you like to listen to? This group of concert-goers are more alert, wearing t-shirts and have ball caps and or scarves on their heads. Concert-goers, Regulator, Green Hill, Black. Alex McNamara, do you think this music or these bands have in any way influenced your lifestyle or beliefs? Concert-goers, no, we just listen to the music, that's all, that's all. As a Jeep drives by with three girls occupying it, two are standing up as it goes by. They are listening to the music and singing. Alex McNamara, hey, who are you listening to? The girls answer in unison, Aerosmith. Alex McNamara, do you think this music has influenced you in any way, shape, or form? Girl in the back seat, get a grip. We just listen to the music, that's all. Alex then walks into a room where a small band is jamming. They have long hair, and they are swinging their heads around to keep beat with the music. Alex McNamara, hey guys, can you tell me what bands you like to listen to? A long-haired kid with a Led Zeppelin t-shirt replies, Led Zeppelin, Ozzy. Alex McNamara, do Do you think this music has affected you in any way?
Kid, what?
Alex McNamara, do you think that listening to these bands have in any way influenced your lifestyles or beliefs?
Kid, no man, we just like the music, that's all.
The second kid holds up his hand making a U with his finger and hisses like a snake. Probably trying to say yeah. The next group of kids he visits are rappers. They have on their ball caps, sunglasses, black t-shirts and chains. Alex McNamara, what are the bands you like to listen to? In unison they all speak at the same time to say, R. Kelly, Domino, Cool J, Snoop. Alex McNamara, do you think that the songs you are listening to have affected your attitude or character?
Kid, no, we just like the music, that's all.
Alex McNamara, well, there you have it, folks, straight from the fans themselves. Apparently, the music they listen to has absolutely no influence on their lifestyle, beliefs, or anything for that matter.
Yep, there you have it, folks, music has absolutely no effect on us whatsoever. It is only words put to music. That's all. We just like the beat. Yeah, right, obviously I'm joking. But as you can see, if you are honest with the facts, music really can and does affect your behavior, and your beliefs, and your buying habits and your dress, you name it, for good or bad. In fact, just like newspapers or radio, music is also subliminally creating the negative behaviors that God warned us about that would appear on the scene when you are living in the last days. And it doesn't matter what genre it is. It is all forms of music doing this. It is producing these wicked scoffing behaviors in the minds of the masses on a massive scale, whether people realize it or not. Here are some examples of the artists, titles of songs, and their lyrics.
Van Halen. Runnin' with the Devil. ICP, Insane Clown Posse. Madonna. And I Don't Give a Expletive If I Go to Hell. Eminem, Role Model. Follow Me and Do Exactly What the Song Says, Smoke Weed, Take Pills, Drop Out of School, Kill People and Drink. I Wish to Sell My Soul, To Be Reborn. I Wish for Earthly Riches, Don't Want No Crown of Thorns. Tonight Is the Night. DMX. I Sold My Soul to the Devil, The Price Was Cheap. Satan's Lie. Hell Ain't a Bad Place to Be. And I Said, Hello Satan, I Believe It's Time to Go. And You Know Me as a Cowboy, Devil Without a Cause, Devil Without a Cause, Devil Without a Cause. Who Cares What They Say, Because Rules Are For Breaking. Beelzebub, Satan, Has a Devil Put Aside for Me. For Me, For Me. If You Want to Be Good Girl, Get Yourself a Bad Boy. Beatles. My Lord, Hare Krishna, My, My, My Lord Hare Krishna, My Sweet Lord. Brain specialist, Dr. Richard Pellegrino declared that music has the uncanny power to trigger a flood of human emotions and images that have the ability to instantaneously produce very powerful changes in emotional states. Take it from a brain guy. In 25 years of working with the brain, I still cannot affect a person's state of mind the way that one simple song can. The Satanist Rex Church admits that Satanists are using music as a weapon of propaganda to influence youth around the world against Christ's order to establish the Antichrist kingdom here on earth. The founder of the Church of Satan declared, "Today's satanic bands are the vehicle of choice for millions of young people. If they encourage a study of real Satanism, I'm all for them." La Vey declares, "Satan has always had the best tunes. Music can inspire people to murder or violence, can inspire them to shoot a mall full of people." Satanist Marilyn Manson. I don't know if anyone has really understood what we're trying to do to lure people in. Once we've got them, we can give them our message. Guitarist Craig Chikiko. Rock concerts are the churches of today. Music puts them on a spiritual plane. Jimi Hendrix. I can explain everything better through music. You hypnotize people, and when you get people at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious what we want to say. Billy Joel in the 50s and 60s. Music was used for a subversive sexual revolution. It makes people feel profane. You remember what they were saying in the early days, that rock and roll was going to subvert our youth, it's going to make them all want to have sex and make them all go crazy. They were right. Country artist Conway Twitty.
As a country artist, I'm not proud of a lot of the things in my field. There is no doubt in my mind that we are contributing to the moral decline in America. Jefferson Starship. Our music is intended to broaden the generation gap and to alienate children from their parents. Spencer Dryden. Get them while they're young and bend their minds. While millions of young people listen to music for several hours a day, the Barna Research Group found that mothers spend less than 30 minutes a day with their children and fathers less than 15. Antichrist Perry Farrell. To the mosquitoes, parents, we have more influence over your children than you do. Insane Clown Posse. Just keep this in mind, they are playing our CDs when they are not home. They are playing my tapes in their own car, and I am influencing your children. What father or mother in their right mind would give their little child, who they claim to love, poison? A physical poison is dangerous, and it will destroy a physical body. How much worse is spiritual poisoning that destroys the soul and has eternal ramification?
Yeah, who in their right mind would inject poison into their body or allow it in their children? But as you can see, that is what's happening with music and all the other forms of media, including newspapers and radio. And here's my point. Do you really think the elite doesn't know this and aren't using this form of media along with newspapers and radio for their own nefarious purposes? Rather, the facts are, music too, just like newspapers and radio, are being used as another manipulative tool by the aliens, I mean rich elites, to control and manipulate the minds of the masses. And if you don't think that a small group of elites really own and control all the music people are listening to all across the planet, in order to manipulate them, just like with newspapers and radio, think again. Here is the proof.
Recorded music is the most concentrated global media market today. In 2005, six leading firms, PolyGram, EMI, Warner Music Group, Sony Music Entertainment, BMG, and Universal Music Group, were estimated to control between 80% to 90% of the global market. As of July 2013, the industry has consolidated even further. A series of mergers has reduced the Big Six to just three large corporations: Universal Music Group, now part of EMI's Recorded Music Division, Sony Music Entertainment, EMI Publishing was absorbed into Sony/ATV Music Publishing, and Warner Music Group, which absorbed EMI's Parlophone and EMI/Virgin Classic labels. Most of these companies are part of larger conglomerates. Vertical concentration and horizontal integration allow cross-pollination to promote products across multiple mediums. For instance, AOL Time Warner owns magazines, book publishing houses, film studios, television networks, cable channels, retail stores, libraries, sports teams, etc., and can thus promote one through the utilization of another. The number of formats provided by radio stations increased in all markets. However, despite different names, formats extensively overlap and have similar playlists. For example, alternative, top 40, rock, and adult contemporary are all likely to play songs by similar bands, even though their formats are not the same. The Future of Music Coalition reports an analysis of charts in radio and records, and Billboard's Airplay Monitor revealed considerable playlist overlap, as much as 76%, between supposedly distinct formats. This overlap may enhance the homogenization of the airwaves. In other words, it is all the same drivel. FMC's study concludes that allowing unlimited national consolidation has resulted in less competition, fewer viewpoints, and a decrease in diversity in radio programming, a trend in the opposite direction of Congress's stated goals for the FCC's media policy. The report, titled False Premises, False Promises: A Quantitative History of Ownership Consolidation in the Radio Industry, also says that radio consolidation has no added benefits for DJs, programmers, and musicians working in the music industry. For listeners, the most readily apparent result of consolidation is the rise of cookie-cutter playlists. Teams of market researchers strategically compile playlists to be as widely appealing as possible rather than base the song choices on merit. For example, on an oldies show, probably the most heavily researched and systematized format in radio, classic hits will be played almost every day, while critically acclaimed songs by the same bands get little or no play. What one hears has been carefully crafted to appeal to targeted demographic groups for that station. As companies seek to extend their demographic reach, they tend to promote music with general appeal. While the general appeal may seem relatively neutral at first glance, This stabilized aesthetic tends to mediate the tastes of a highly particular demographic, namely, the social sector with disposable income. When economic criteria drive programming decisions, it follows that radio play, media coverage, and sales will be directed toward the most lucrative demographics. Whoever I can manipulate the most money from. A huge wave of consolidation has turned music stations into cash cows that focus on narrow playlists aimed at squeezing the most revenue from the richest demographics. Truth be told, in this era of mega mergers, there has never been a greater need for a little diversity on the dial.
But that's not going to happen, because the music industry is now, just like with newspapers and radio, owned by the hands of just a select few group of aliens, I mean rich elites around the world that admit they're using it for their own nefarious purposes. Anyone starting to see a pattern here with all these different forms of media? It is all being used to control the narrative and to manipulate the minds of the masses on a global scale for their own nefarious purposes. I'm not making this up. I wish I was. But this is going on all over the world, whether we realize it or not, or even admit or not. It has given rise to an increase of wickedness in people's behavior like the Bible warned about 2,000 years ago in the coming last days society, as well as it simultaneously produced a global society of scoffers towards the existence of God and His soon coming judgment. Total manipulation of the minds of the masses, across the whole planet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just by simply owning the media called newspapers, radio, and now even music. Which means, right now as we speak, the whole planet is being bombarded by three different forms of manipulative media, which is why some are calling this a prison planet. But unfortunately, it is about to get even worse. You see, these aliens, I mean rich elites, are not merely content with just owning all the newspapers and radio broadcasts and whole music industry around the planet to control the minds of the masses. No way. In their insatiable lust for power and domination, they are literally out there amassing all forms of media in order to get the job done. Including print media, books, and the whole educational system around the whole planet that utilizes said books to educate people, or as you will soon see, indoctrinate people into what they want them to think, act, believe, or do, just like all the other forms of media. The sad reality is, the media of books and education are also telling us to not think for ourselves, to obey only what they want us to obey, to never question them, and of course, to scoff specifically at the Bible, God, Jesus, and His soon coming judgment. Where have I heard that before? I know it's hard to believe, but once again, keep those glasses on, and let's now begin this next journey exposing how this next form of media is also mesmerizing the minds of the masses.